2001, the order, it's 11:35. Seventh of June, I think, is it seventh day?
Mm-hmm.
And with us today, we have Senator French, Senator Huggins, Rep. Cortula, Rep. Kelly, Rep. Samuels, and myself, Senator Stedman. We're going to break this conference committee down in multiple layers. I don't think we'll come to a resolution in the first few minutes. So we'll probably end up having lunch and then getting back together a little later just so everybody can plan their schedule. In the audience here today, we have Senator Stevens. We have Senator Guest, if she leaves, Senator Wagner.
She's there.
Here. Any other reps or senators?
Steve Newman.
Newman? Oh,
Steve Newman. Newman and Steve.
Or Rep. Newman.
Steve.
Rep. Steve. So we have a good balance in the audience. The flow of the order, there'll be a motion to adopt the Senate version, and there'll be a vote on that. There'll be a motion to adopt the House version, a vote on that, and then we'll deal with the next step. And with that, I'd like to go ahead and have a motion to adopt Senate version F.
Mr. Chair, I move that committee substitute Senate Bill 2001 Finance Version F be adopted.
We have a motion.
Object.
Do we have objection?
Object.
Anybody want to speak to the objection? We should have a roll call vote. Who's going to call a roll?
Senator French?
Nay.
Senator Huggins?
Yes.
Representative Cortula?
Nay.
Representative Kelly?
No.
Representative Samuels?
No.
Chair Stedman?
Yes. Motion fails 4-1 to adopt Senate version F. Rep. Samuels, do we have a motion?
Just a point of order, Mr. Chairman. I think it was a
4-2. 4-2.
Excuse me, 4-2, what did I say?
4-1.
Four-one.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the House version.
And we have a motion. I object. Discussion on adopting House version X.A. I think if the roll will be called, please.
Senator French?
Yes.
Senator Huggins?
No.
Representative Cortula?
Yes.
Representative Kelly?
Yes.
Representative Samuels?
Yes.
Chair Stedman?
No. Motion fails. 3 ayes, 2 nays.
4-2 again.
4-2. So my mind is on other things. Anyway, the intent here is to go to limited free powers so we can continue to discuss and try to resolve this. I don't think we need a motion on that, correct? To go to limited freeze?
We have to go back to that.
Mr. Chairman, I think we have to go back to the respective bodies to get it granted. So, yeah, we'd have to have a motion, and then it has to go back to the respective floors.
No.
Are we?
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, if we could just have an at ease.
I've never seen it done.
Through the bill and highlight the differences in the bill, and then we'll discuss what we'll do with it. At the next step, how's that? We have, everybody should have a list of discussion items. It's 2 pages long. It's a comparative of the Senate version versus the House version. And also, the bills are more similar than they are dissimilar. So the list here is only 10 items, and the item number one is the general tax rate. The Senate version has a tax rate of 22.5, so on page 3, and the House version has a rate of 23.5. There is a little differences on Cook Inlet Oil. There's a three-quarter revenue exclusion on the Senate side for Cook Inlet. It's on page 19. And on the House version, they treat it a little different. They have an ELF, economic limit factor, tax ceiling on Cook Inlet. It's on page 3. The second item is a credit usage or a floor. The Senate version has no floor. The House put in a floor. That's section 0.024. And that's on page 10. Item number...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
The floor, and maybe Representative Kelly would be better to speak to it, but the floor was not a tax floor. It was a floor on which credits could not be used. So a little different. One earlier version of this bill, sometime in the past couple of months, there was actually a tax floor. I don't know if it was ever adopted or not, but...
I misspoke.
Okay.
I misspoke. It's a floor for the utilization of taxes.
Credits.
Or credits. Then item 3 is a GRE or the gas revenue exclusion. It's included in the Senate version and not in the House. In the Senate, it's on page 19 to 20. Item number 4 is what's commonly referred to as progressivity, or it's a surtax. Both bills have it, but they have a different slope or multiplier in it, which in effect is a slope. The Senate version has 0.001%, where the House version is 0.0025%. The rest of the mechanics of the progressivity are the same, or the surtax. Item number 5 deals with transition credits. The Senate has 5-year look back on capital expenditures, 2-for-1 and recoup. That's on page 11 and 12. The House has very similar language on page 13, but there's some corrections in there. Those are very similar. Item number 6, the base allowance. There's a $12 million credit, or limited to $1 million a month. It equates to $53.3 million a year. This is on the Senate version. It's not based on production, and it's located on page 26. On the House version, it's a $12 million credit again, $1 million a month. And it equates to $60 million deduction, and it's based on production. And that's on page 29 in the House version. The item number 7, the development credit, the Senate version doesn't address it on the House version. On page 28, there's a $6 million credit, $500,000 per month for areas not the last one slope is put in the 10-year item number 8, which is transition payments. In the Senate version, there's 10 months of payments of the old system and the true-up in the 11th month. That's on page 33 and 34. On the House version, it's on page 36 and 37. It's very, very similar, although there's some clarification with it. Item number 9, credit for annual loss. Their versions are different. The Senate version is 22.5. It's on page 8. And again, that just reflects the tax rate in the Senate version. The House version is 23.5 on page 10. Again, that reflects the tax version of the House. That's item number nine. Item number 10, oil spill language is, they're very similar there on the Senate version. In oil spill cleanup costs are not deductible except for gravel pads and the, on the House version, they cleaned that language up a little bit and changed it to approved pad language, and that's on page 25. Those are the differences within the two bills. And seems how neither one of the two bills was adopted to go forward. We have here a letter for us to sign if we agree to take it to the next conference, which would be limited pre-conference on these items listed one through 10. Comments? Rep. Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, it might be helpful. There may be some of these items, for example, where there's a clarification or a correction where we can go to one version or the other and probably get through that very quickly without having additional powers. If it's your intent to break for lunch, maybe what before we go to the request for limited powers, we could discuss as we break for lunch which of these items are could be very quickly resolved in that fashion, like if they're just a clarification or something where with just a few questions and responses we might knock that item off the list.
Yeah, I'd prefer that we don't do that. I think that when we go into limited pre-conference, some of the items will take a little longer, some of them will be fairly short, and the first step is just to adopt one bill or the other.
If we're going to break for lunch anyway, maybe that's something we can take up after lunch.
Right, we'll go through that. We could, after lunch when we start limited free, we could roll through the list and knock off some of the easy ones if you would like. We don't have to necessarily take them in order 1 through 10.
Yeah, I guess what I'm asking, Mr. Chairman, we want to have a chance for us to talk before we go into limited free.
Is it possible to get Mr. Dickinson? I don't know what his schedule is doing to. I got a couple quick questions where it says corrected. Is it actually the same?
Mr. Dickinson, if you could identify yourself.
Dan Dickinson, formerly with the Tax Division, currently working with the administration on these matters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item 5, it just said corrected. Item 8, it says clarification. What's the difference on those two? I don't mind putting them in, Mr. Chairman, putting it all into pre-conference. I understand that, but if it's the same, before we start talking about the tools that we can all use, if it's not a tool, I'd like to know that too.
Representative Samuels, through the chair, on item number 5, there is a change in two numbers, two fractions. I think it's one of those cases where everyone knew what they intended. We talked it through the number of people, and somehow we read something different. So that I believe the intent is absolutely the same in both versions. It just simply we had the wrong thing multiplied by the wrong thing, and so we simply had to build a 0.20 into two fractions, and those fractions changed. I can certainly walk through the example, but everyone we've talked to eventually agrees that the words didn't reflect the intent in the Senate version. We believe the Senate's version, the Senate's intent and the House's intent is reflected in the House language.
Okay. Thank you. And number 8?
Number 8, I believe that is the same thing in the sense of it is just the question of whether the final true-up for the prior 10 months would occur at the end of that period or would be with the next payment. And I believe that what we've gone, the Senate version used months, the House version goes to days, and I believe the intent is to make very specific when that would occur. But again, I do not believe that there is any difference in intent. I believe it's just trying to make the mechanics absolutely clear.
And while I've got you here, number 10.
Representative Samuels, through the chair, I believe, I don't have it in front of me, maybe folks do, I believe that there was a phrase of gravel pad used in the Senate version, and the House version went to, I believe it says pad structure, or if there's one, if there's a third term.
Platform
or structure. I think, again, the intent was the same, although I think, obviously, there could be slightly different interpretations here. It's not quite as mechanical as the other two. The notion was gravel pads were too restrictive, or they would deal with a subset of what folks were looking at. In the Cook Inlet, sort of the platform is the equivalent of a gravel pad, and then other structures might be ice pads or things like that. But the notion was, as long as the spill was in it, was in a sort of a contained area, that would probably be the normal procedures. Again, routine. The phrase we're trying to capture is costs above routine costs associated with an oil spill. And so we thought, the discussion, and that was an administration attorney who suggested that language, was simply clarifying the thought. I think 10 is a little bit, arguments might be made about whether 10 is a slight expansion of the term. It is an expansion of the term. It's trying to get to the same idea.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question on that section, Mr. Chairman? Did we have contingency plans in the Senate bill as it came over, or was that added also in the House language?
Representative Kutula, through the chair, I believe it's there. I believe that was added in the governor's reintroduction of the bill without those two documents in front of me.
This may be a question for someone after the break. I can see how a gravel pad on the North Slope is equivalent to a platform, a Cook Inlet, but I'm not quite sure how the word structure works in there. And so I'm not sure how, on the slope, all structures are on gravel pads. It'd be impossible to have a spill on a structure that wasn't contained to a pad. So I guess I need an example of where folks think that structure idea would come into play.
Fair enough, Senator French. We'll talk about that. Mr. Chairman, it's not appropriate, you can tell me I'm out of line, but there are two areas here where the characterizations, I might have a slight suggestion as to a different characterization. If it's not appropriate this time, I won't offer those.
And maybe what we'll do is, Mr. Dickinson, you're going to have a luncheon engagement.
Correct.
So we could check on that, plus the issue that Rick Pertula brought up, and bring him up when we get back together this afternoon. And then hopefully you'll be available this afternoon when we walk through these. So, as mentioned, item number 5 is going to be extremely fast, but some other ones might be substantially slower that you could help us and the public thoroughly understand the differences that we're dealing with.
Chairman Stebbins, I can also get Rob Mintz, who did some of the drafting on this, and Robin Wilson on the phone as well.
Okay.
Also, there's a hearing going on, as you know, elsewhere that I've also been requested, so I'll move back and forth as appropriate.
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dan, after lunch or whenever we see you again, I'd like an explanation of what House Finance did on Cook Inlet. Kind of a walkthrough with that I didn't get to details on that. And then on item 7, the NVERIA development credit. I understand the 10-year rolling average was from a version quite a while ago, but I want an explanation of those two items just to make sure it's clear in my head where they morphed from.
Ms. Ripko. Mr. Chairman, I think it would also be helpful if Mr. Dickinson would go over that change in the floor, because I think that's something that a lot of folks haven't had a full chance to hear your explanation.
So as the maker of the amendment, I believe on the floor, we'll hope I can explain it. You probably can explain it more articulately than I can, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I think the floor issue and the surtax and the tax itself or whether there are going to be some of the harder issues or more detail-oriented issues as we work through the afternoon. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, we had some requests for data, which we were able to supply this morning. If there are any additional requests for comparisons or things like that, if we could get a little bit of several hour lead time, of course, that helps the ability to put those together. So if there are any of those, and I could get them, ask folks at the Department of Revenue during lunch, that might be useful.
The Econ 1 has done some charts. I want to make sure that everybody has them. Senator French, you're giving me a kind of a blank look. Are you?
I've seen this.
Okay, and then?
That's just my normal look.
Okay.
a blank look.
And then Mr. Dickinson has done some analysis and charts with progressivity with fairly small increments. And then I asked him to do one with just the House and the Senate bill without all the other little increments in it. And that I will make sure that gets to everybody before the meeting so everybody has ample time. To look that information over. We're also, I think, going to open up that back curtain, possibly, to have the room a little bit bigger. Rep. Petula, did you get the Econ 1 charts emailed this morning?
I think so. I haven't been back to my office. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, well, if there's any questions, just give our office a holler. And if also if there's any additional backup that may that one or more folks may need that goes back in time, we got quite an extensive record list in our office. We could, if we don't have it at our fingertips, we could get copies to you. So if you have any questions, because this bill, as we all know, has been in many forms over many months.
Need a motion, Mr. Chairman, to request?
I don't think I technically need a motion to request limited free powers, but I do, if everybody agrees, get a letter, we'll go ahead and find autographs.
So on all sections, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, no. All 10.
All 10.
10 of the, on the sheet.
No, just the differences.
Brief it is, Mr. Speaker.
Brief it is. The clerk to go to limited free conference, and rather than take all of the list of the items for free conference that are different from the bill, items 1 through 10 that were specified, some of the members want to deal with three of them before lunch and leave some of the other ones that give some people more indigestion until after lunch. So we're going to start with item number 3, the gas revenue exclusion. There is an inclusion in the Senate bill, and it is not included in the House bill. And if Mr. Dickinson could please explain the differences.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dan Dickinson, former director of the Tax Division, and I apologize, I'm doing a little freeform here, but. What you had in the Senate bill were three different GREs, or gas revenue exclusions, the net effect of which was, as it says here, in Cook Inlet, two-thirds of the gas would have been excluded, one-third would have been included. And what we mean by that is when you go to measure the revenues, you would remove a certain portion of the revenues, but all the costs would still be present there. So what that could have the effect of is in a situation where you had high costs, you could end up, for example, showing a loss, even though, in fact, if you'd included all the revenues, you would not have had a loss. For the North Slope, those numbers would have been reversed. One-third of the gas would have been excluded, two-thirds would have been included. And for any place else in the state in between, you would have had sort of the average of the two, but one-half of the gas excluded, one-half of the gas included. The House bill did away with the GRE, but instead had in Cook Inlet a test similar to the one that you would see up in item 1 where it sells an ELF tax ceiling. And what the House bill would have done is said,
in Cook Inlet for Cook Inlet gas, you'll calculate your taxes just as you would normally, and then you will compare that to a base period, which would have been the 1 year ending April 1st of 2006, so from March 31st, 2005 to April 1st, 2006, you would compare it to the taxes that you would have paid under the prevailing value during that period, and the ELF, the economic limit factor that was that would be calculated for each lease or property in that month. So the unit tax, the tax per MCF, would essentially hit a cap based on what it was for the prior year. So the only way that mechanically the taxes could go up would be if there were more volumes. If there were more volumes, you could pay a higher tax, but you would be capped at a dollar per MCF amount. Furthermore, in the House bill, if as a consequence of that second ceiling, so let's say you calculate your PPT tax and you owe $10 million, then you went and calculated what you would have paid under the ceiling and you owed $5 million. Because you were paying $5 million less, the House bill would have required, for example, that you would lose the ability to use credits, for example, the 170 credit. Under 170, every company gets a credit of $12 million to apply to lower their taxes. If under the House version, you were getting a $5 million reduction as a consequence of this ELF ceiling, you would lose $5 million, the ability to apply all of that 170 credit. You would, however, retain the ability to use the 024 credits, which are the investments. So what the situation does, what the House language does, creates a situation where essentially we're saying, or the bill says, because of this ceiling, if you pay less, your ability to use credits will be less, but it doesn't go away completely. Instead, if you also make investments, those credits can be applied. So that's a kind of a shorthand version of it. I can go through it in a little more detail. But basically, instead of a gas revenue exclusion in Cook Inlet, there is this ceiling. I think the two of them will have overall, I think the intent was to recognize the maturity of the Cook Inlet Basin, also to recognize the fact that many of the severance taxes there are passed on to consumers as opposed to being paid by the actual companies producing. And so those are just two mechanisms for approaching gas in Cook Inlet. The one-half revenue exclusion for other areas essentially has as its counterpart the item number 7. So in the Senate version, there would have been a gas revenue exclusion to allow for perhaps an explorer to have or someone developing Bristol Bay or Nanana Basin to have a certain some tax relief. Instead of the GRE, the House bill goes in and says we will have an additional $6 million credit that is available in that arena, someplace not North Slope, someplace not Cook Inlet, that can be applied, but it has all the other restrictions that the 170 credits have. Can't be transferred. If you don't use it up in a year, you can't carry it forward. It simply says if in a year you're generating taxable values in those places, or a tax obligation in those places, this credit allows you to reduce that obligation by $6 million.
If we have just a brief idea, maybe we could have
there's nothing comparable to the ANS exclusion in the House version.
Could you repeat that? I can't hear what too many people talking.
Certainly. And then the final piece of the GRE was a exclusion on the North Slope, and there's nothing, sort of no comparable piece in the House legislation.
Senator French, you?
I was just wanting amplification on that point, that the North Slope gas would not be, you wouldn't be carving out any portion of the North Slope gas when it comes to taxation, taxing the full production value of that gas.
Senator French, through the chair, that's correct.
Just one last thing, Dan, while you're out. On the Roseburg Amendment, the Cook Inlet, the thing that happened yesterday that we did, Just a 1 minute, very brief. I understand your time constraint.
Certainly. Representative Kelly, through the chair.
If we could just have a brief answer while everybody's standing up and going over. We've got a typo. We're going to pick up here where we left off here in just a second, but there was a typo in the letter for limited three on the first item under both the House and the Senate version. Should have read 0.011E instead of 0.001. So you know, we corrected that, and the members are all aware of it. So that's been taken care of. Mr. Dickinson, if you'd continue with item number three.
Certainly. Representative Kelly, through the chair, what the amendment did on the House floor yesterday was the last point I had talked about. What it clarified was that, again, let's take a situation under the PPT in Cook Inlet. Let's assume I'm a gas-only producer to make this very simple. I generate $10 million of tax liability. We go in, we do the set of tests that are here, and it comes out to $5 million of tax liability. So I only owe five. What the amendment, what the bill would have read up until the floor amendment yesterday is, if the sum total of all my other credits came to $4 million, I would not have been able to use any of them. What the bill yesterday, that the floor amendment said that the investment credits, the credits associated or detailed in section 024, those will continue to be applied even if you have had a large reduction in your tax as a consequence of the ELF-based test.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have any other questions?
No.
We have a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the House. I move that we adopt the House language on item 3, the gas revenue exclusion, which in effect eliminates the language on the gas revenue exclusion.
The motion is to adopt the House version of item number 3, the gas revenue exclusion. Do we have objection? Hearing none, we have adopted the House version. Item number 3, we'll go to item number 5.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I move we adopt the House version on item number 5.
I will object. for discussion. There's item number five is on transition. There's a technical correction. Mr. Dickinson, if you would respond to that, please.
Mr. Chairman, I think, just to give one example, if a producer had been investing at a certain rate, let's just say $1 million a year, I think everyone's intent was that if that $1 million could qualify for the TIE, otherwise qualify, that if in the after the bill is passed and they increased their investment, that they could then recapture all of that TIE, or transitional investment expenditure. The way the words were framed here, in fact, a producer could lower their expenditures. If they had been spending $1 million a year, they could have dropped to $400,000 a year and still recouped all their TIE. Instead, so what we had to do was go in and change a number to make that mechanically so that they would have to increase it. What actually happened was the bill originally had this section as a allowance or a deduction. It got changed to a credit, and somehow one of the fractions didn't get the 20% multiplied times it. And so where it had said one-fifth, we now had to go to one-tenth. Excuse me, where it said one-half, we had to go to one-tenth. And where it said I won't get the other fraction quite right. I think it's from 1/120th.
Yeah.
From 1/12th, we had to go to 1/120th.
Okay. So these were...
There was a technical correction. We had discussed them with a number of folks from both the bodies, walked through the difference, and I think everyone was ultimately in agreement. It was a case where you read it so many times you thought you knew what it said. Fresh eyes caught the fact that it didn't quite say that.
Right. Okay. Can I remove my objection? There is no objection. We'll take the House version of that. We're running Mr. Dickinson kind of late. Let's go ahead and break for lunch. We got one other item, so that it'll be fairly fast. The rest of them are going to start slowing us down. We'll get together. We'll be at ease to the call of the chair. Allow Mr. Dickinson to have lunch. Allow the members to make sure that they've got all of their current data and are prepared for this afternoon. And I'll. My office will be notifying your offices of when we get together. So we are at ease to a call the chair. Well, as readily apparent this evening, we don't have any members of the House here to negotiate with us on the oil tax bill that we've been working on for 4 months. So I'm going to go back to at ease till hopefully 9 a.m. tomorrow morning is the time in this room, and we'll have our other body members here to continue the negotiations on the PPT tax bill for the people, so we can hopefully finish by tomorrow night's deadline. With that, we're at ease.